Franchising, bundle of IP and business model used in retail and services, ensures global standardization, creates piggybacking. Bundle of IP and business model, that means it is not only restricted to one brand or one product that you want to sell. You have a full family of products that are being represented by a single entity in the foreign country. Used in retail and services, this usually happens for FMCG products or products that are grouped in a family, that means similar to each other. Ensures global standardization. You are going to now manufacture, they are now going to manufacture products which are standardized for those countries that they are operating in or selling to. Like for example, you could have a country in Europe, let's say Germany, where you have this franchising arrangement with a local sub-manufacturer or a distributor. Now what he would do is he would manufacture the product and offer it for sale, because you have told him that he can sell anywhere in Europe, or rather, once you get into the EU, you get access to 21 different EU members. That is how EU operates. An import license or a franchising license in one European Union country means the market is now open to the entire, all the members of the EU. Creates piggybacking. You may have a product which requires a certain component or a certain sub-product that needs to go into. You could have your supplier wanting to set up business there, and that would be creating piggybacking. The other option possible to have your presence of manufacturing in a overseas market is going through a joint venture. Shared ownership with local partner, risk and cost sharing, access to local expertise, a new local entity. Shared ownership with local partner, the biggest benefit here is that the risk as well as the finance is both shared, whatever percentage, most of the time 49 and 51. Second, as I said, risk and cost sharing. So the risk, both of you are in it together. Access to local expertise. The local partner now brings in local expertise in terms of manufacturing, in terms of market knowledge, in terms of distribution knowledge, in terms of the distribution net infrastructure, etc. The possibilities are limitless. New legal entity. You have a new company here now that is known or recognized as a joint venture between you as the manufacturer and your local partner. Wholly owned subsidy, 100% ownership. This is where you go in to the country and you don't look at a partner, but you are ready to invest 100% into setting up your own manufacturing unit there or your production unit in that country. It requires a huge investment, that is why they say high investment. But what you get in exchange is full control over operations. Now it is your responsibility to manufacture, to source, manufacture and distribute the product in that market or in the region. Tax and regional incentives, yes, there would be benefits available to you, especially what happens in free trade zone companies or what we have SEEPs as an example in Mumbai, where you have an export-oriented area where everything that is manufactured, the output that comes out there is always exported. There's a similar arrangement happens overseas where whatever you manufacture is sold locally only in that country or in that region. Selecting the right mode. Now we have seen so many possibilities of entering an overseas market. Selecting the right mode of entry is what is very, very important. It requires a lot of market research and analysis. Clarify strategic objectives. Evaluate resources and risk tolerance and cost-benefit analysis. Market research and analysis, you have got to look at markets not only in a country overseas, but you will have to look at things that are happening overseas market as well as regionally. The reason being that a lot many countries have got porous borders. What I mean by porous borders is where materials flow in and out through those borders without any restrictions, because they have got maybe free trade agreements between the two countries. Clarify strategic objectives. What does the company want to do strategically? How do they want to plan their expansion into the overseas market? These are very tough questions which need to be answered, not only answered, but thought over, discussed, and then a strategy decided. Evaluate resources and risk tolerance. These are two elements that you would want to look at when you want to consider trying to clarify your strategic objectives. What are the resources that you have in terms of finance, men, machine, everything, as well as what is the risk that you are able to tolerate in case when things don't turn out the way you wanted them or the way you want them to in the overseas market. And cost-benefit analysis. Definitely, the business was established for a benefit or for making money. Now, does the cost, that is the investment, really give you the benefit? It may not in an overseas market immediately, but you would like to look at a time frame of maybe 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, and then see where the cost-benefit analysis works out. Risks in foreign market entry, regulatory compliance, IP protection risks, currency and financial risks, exit strategy planning. So whenever you want to get into a foreign market, you've decided, you got your strategy in place, you got your resources in place, you've got taken a decision, yes, I want to enter. When you want to enter, you need to look at what are the regulatory compliances that you would have to comply to. You would also want to have protection for your IP, whether it is franchising, whether it is licensing, or whether it is your own manufacturer. Currency and financial risk, as I said, currency fluctuations and financial risks. That means, do those local banks support you as an overseas supplier or an overseas entity with loans, with financial benefits as a local bank would here? And what should be your exit strategy in case if things don't work out, how would you like to get out of that market or whether you would decide to continue in the long term? Now, this was as far as sales to that overseas market was concerned. What happens to sourcing from overseas? Purchasing from foreign suppliers, lower costs and better quality, access to specialized skills, global competitiveness. Sourcing from overseas, purchasing from foreign suppliers. A lot many times, we need to purchase materials from foreign suppliers. The reason being that the raw materials, the labor, and the processing infrastructure available in those countries is much cheaper and much lower in terms of costs and give you much better quality. You get access to specialized skills in those regions, in those areas, because that is what those people are very competent in. And then you are able to compete with global competitors because you are practically sourcing from the same sources or the same region that your competitor is also. Benefits of overseas sourcing, cost reduction, supply chain diversification, market expansion opportunities, and access to innovation. Cost reduction, we all understood, raw materials, cost of raw material, of labor, of processing, etc. Supply chain diversification. Now your supply chain, while it would mean a little extra work for your supply chain management to look at the imports from your overseas suppliers, let us realize that you will have much more relief in terms of follow-up on the local suppliers. So, and you would have bigger quantities as well as you would have different sources to get your raw materials in. Market expansion opportunities. When you are sourcing from a market, you would also want to look at what happens to that market if I have to sell in that market. does my product have a market in the same area, same region, or the same country? Access to innovation. When you are importing materials at whatever stage they are, if they are just raw materials, which is done hardly by any companies, you would always want to process that material to utilize the innovation there and the skill that is available in those countries. What are the challenges of overseas sourcing? Longer lead times, cultural and language barriers, quality control issues, regulatory compliance. Longer lead times because shipping itself would take about 3 weeks. Manufacturing at that facility would take some more time. So your order placed today in for all practical purposes would be available to you maybe 6 weeks later or even later than that. This means that you would want to hold inventory at your stage to cover such long lead times. Cultural and language barriers. Yes, many a times there are cultural barriers in terms of certain practices that the workforce follows, certain things that they would want to do, they will not want to do. And the other problem could be, the other challenge could be the language. Added to this is the fact that your supplier may be in a different time zone. So you would have to match time zones in terms of communication, in terms of making calls, in terms of talking to people once you have got over the language and cultural barriers. Quality control issues. It is observed that in most countries where labor and infrastructure and manufacturing is cheaper, the quality is not always the best. There are exceptions, no doubt, but in general, most of the companies offering you cheaper products do not really bother about the quality or do not have quality control in place at the way you would want it to be. And regulatory compliance. There would be countries which would restrict you from whatever is exported from those countries, or there could be regulatory compliance that you would have to adhere to when you are importing those products or the products that you need from your overseas sources. If that is the case, what is actually global sourcing? Procurement from global suppliers, best price and efficiency, economies of scale, technology and innovation access. Now, when we are talking of global sourcing, procurement from global suppliers, now this global supplier is, which implies that we are talking of a brand which is known across the world, and you are now trying to source something from that brand which would then fit into your final product. To give you an example, again, from the auto industry, you would want to import, let's say, windshields or tires of a known brand, let's say Bridgestone or some other brand from overseas. Leave aside the fact that Bridgestone today is manufactured in India, but when it was not always manufactured in India. So the time that they really started manufacturing, I'm talking of a time period just before that, you would want to procure them from global suppliers. Best price and efficiency. Now, if you were able to import or order a certain volume, you would get much better price than the same tire of the same quality locally. So that would be best price and efficiency. Economies of scale. As volumes went up, you would have much better prices, much better transportation cost, and you would get actually avail of economies of scale. Technology and innovation access. Tires, or let's say if your source has been innovative and has a very strong R&D and has been producing tires, maybe they could produce tires, as an example that we took, for the Indian roads and the Indian way of driving. Types of global sourcing. Domestic purchasing, international sourcing, international procurement, centralized global procurement, and integrated global sourcing. Let's define those sourcing objectives first. You need to define sourcing objectives identify suppliers and regions, evaluate supplier capabilities, monitor and optimize performance. So you first, before you get into any kind of supplier, you need to first look at what are your sourcing objectives. Are you sourcing raw materials? Are you sourcing processed materials? Or what are you trying to source? Or a finished product from a company which becomes a sub-assembly into your final product. Identify suppliers and regions. So you, once you have decided what kind, what is your objective, you would want to look at suppliers and regions that such suppliers are available. Evaluate supplier capabilities. That means you need to go there and evaluate those, the capabilities of those suppliers, and then monitor and optimize their performance. Export-import documentation, mandatory for international trade, ensures compliance and smooth flow, different for exporters and importers, country-specific requirements. Mandatory for international trade, import-export documentation is most important. In fact, it's good to understand that a lot major, about 25 to 30% of companies who have the capability of exports do not get into exports because they don't want to get into the export documentation. Well, it's a very funny situation, but yes, that's a fact of life. Because they are not big players, they are not able to afford having a export house established in the premises or even hiring a C&F agent and the fear of what would happen for exports. So, while export-import documentation is mandatory for international trade because otherwise material cannot move beyond your own borders. Ensures compliance and smooth flow. This documentation, although a little complicated, is not so complicated, and it once you ensure compliance, the flow of material is extremely smooth. Different for exporters and importers, definitely. If you are exporting, you got less compliance, or if you are importing, you have got more compliance, and this happens universally in every country. Country-specific requirements is in addition to the regular standard import-export documentation. What are the very essential export documents? A pro forma invoice, export license, packing list, insurance certificate, export declaration, and EEI is the export invoice. Okay, pro forma invoice, this is the time where you are, this is the first document wherein if you have received an inquiry from one of your overseas customers, this is the pro forma invoice is what you generate with all terms, conditions, prices, and all entire details of what you want to sell to that customer. Once this pro forma invoice is received in a confirmed condition or an accepted condition, without any changes, without any conditions added from the customer's end, this pro forma invoice then acts as your base for your manufacturing order at your factory. Once you have done that, once you have received that, on the basis of this pro forma invoice, you would also apply for an export license, either if it is on just one piece, on a piece-to-piece basis, or you would need an export license on a permanent basis. Entirely depends on your factory, your company, and your business, and the country that you are in. Packing list, that is a document which will define what is contained in which carton, and is used not only by the shipping line, but is used by the customs at origin as well as at destination. Insurance certificate, your customer as well as you yourself would like to ensure that the products, if any damages happen during the voyage, are insured for compensation. Export declaration is what you will generate once you have generated the consignment, or the consignment is ready for dispatch to your customer. Essential import documents, the starting point here for imports is your import license. So So let's say now the case is reversed, where you are trying to import certain material. You can use the pro forma invoice that you have confirmed to give the authorities an indication of what are the types of materials that you want to import, or if you get you are applying for an import license for the entire business itself. There would be an inspection certificate that you would need from a third party that you would appoint in the exporting country, a certificate of origin from the manufacturer saying that the products were manufactured in his country of origin, and shipping and payment documents. Shipping documents is the bill of lading and the fact that there were certain payment documents that you generated for ensuring that payment reached the supplier. Shipping and special documents, bill of lading, letter of credit, shipping bill, MSDS, phytosanitary, GPM certificate, etc. Bill of lading is what is generated by the shipping line, and it is a negotiable document. That the reason being that when the material is taken over by the shipping line, the bill of lading is a receipt given by that shipping line to the exporter that they are now in custody of the material set to contain as described on that bill of lading. So this bill of lading is what an importer needs when he has to clear the goods or take delivery of the goods from the shipping line. Letter of credit, this is a guarantee for the supplier to ensure that his payment will come through as soon as the documents have been received by the customer. A shipping bill is where you specify the charges that are to be paid for the shipping purposes for all the transportation in between, and there could be different shipping bills. That means not only the shipping bill for the shipping line, but also for the local transporter at origin as well as the transporter at destination. MSDS is material safety data sheet, which describe the precautions or the process to be followed in case if you are handling certain materials which require certain specific methodology or precautions or safety measures to be taken depending on the hazardous level of the cargo. To summarize, international operations require strategic planning. Global sourcing offers cost and innovation benefits. Correct entry mode ensures success, and documentation is critical for compliance. So as we understood, international operations definitely requires a lot of strategic planning, a lot of decision making, and a lot of data in terms of research and analysis of an export of a overseas market. Global sourcing offers cost and innovation, but then you would have to go and actually look at sources, identify them, identify their capabilities, and then take a call as to from whom you are going to import or source. Correct entry mode ensures success. So if you are getting into a overseas market for sales, you need to decide whether you want to go in with an agent, with a distributor, or you want to have a subsidiary office there. Documentation is critical for compliance. Whether you're importing or you're exporting, documentation compliance is definitely critical. Thank you.